No longer shall man's salvation be dependent on his self-denial, and it shall be known that the world of the flesh and the living shall be the greatest preparation for any and all eternal delights. Regi Satanas, Ave Satanas, Hail Satan!
Here we are for episode 56.
Episode 56 and a hurricane's coming.
I know. See, yeah. we're recording this show early. It's actually Saturday.
Yeah.
And we're in Central Florida, if you guys didn't know. So we're kind of bracing for the impact of Hurricane Irma. It'll probably be tomorrow, right?
Yeah, so we'll have it up set to upload on the normal time.
Yeah, because
in case we get blown away, I know. Not here to do it.
I don't think we'll get blown away, but for sure the power will probably be out. So I wanted to get the show done and out of the way early so I can get it uploaded go out on time. Hopefully we'll be all right. We've already had one. Dean McCaskill already asked us. He sent me a message saying to be safe. And I was like, thanks, man.
Yeah, I know. And I'm trying to get that generator together. I'm just waiting for RTV to dry. Mechanics know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Black RTV takes forever to cure.
Hopefully it'll be all right. I mean, do you know how we spent, the few hours last night? We were making, pounds and pounds of, pasta and boiled eggs and boiled chicken and stuff like that. Just so if the power goes out, we can make,
we have cooked
pasta
food.
Salad and stuff like that.
Got propane, but we won't have electricity. Well, I'm planning not to have electricity.
We probably won't have it, but we'll see. Because even if it's not that bad, the electricity is probably
The ice makers can't make ice fast enough.
Yeah.
It's all kinds of stuff that go wrong.
I know, it's terrible. Well, as long as the roof stays on and all the walls stay up, the windows stay unbroken.
I'm just going to sit there hold the walls. I'll just push all my weight up against it like out of one of the zombie movies. Bring all the motorcycles indoors.
Yeah.
The motorcycles are probably safer in the garages because that's all cinder block.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
But, by the time the show goes up, we should know if we're still alive.
Yeah.
But we'll let you guys know.
This is the biggest storm in recorded history.
In recorded history, yeah. Right? And there's two more behind it. Yay.
Yeah.
Although I think one of them is little and it's hitting Mexico, so.
Yeah.
So.
190 mile an hour winds.
Yeah, oh boy. Well, we'll see how it goes. Okay. But anyway, so, today the show is going to be about Anton LaVey.
Good old Anton.
And this is probably our most requested topic, I think.
Yeah.
It's been requested at least 3 times.
Yeah, I think so.
So we're finally getting around to doing it. If you remember, we did a show about Aleister Crowley back on episode 24.
Yeah.
So, I think it was on that show that everyone was like, hey, do one on Anton LaVey? And I was like, all right, I'll get around to it. So
kind of on a related subject, occult type leaders or dark occult spiritualists or something.
Yeah.
But, Anton was a lot different than Crowley.
Yeah, true. But before we do that, let's do our regular shout outs. If you go to our t-shirt store, which is zazzle.com/13o'clock, I actually I think I mentioned on our Escape from New York movie review that I made a Snake Plissken t-shirt.
Yeah, it came out cool.
But I've also made an Elizabeth Bathory shirt.
Yeah.
In honor of our show about her. So that's up there too. I'm going to make some more in the future. I just haven't got around to it yet. But those two are new and they're up there.
Yeah, all these shirts look cool too. You guys need to snap them up. Drink them up.
Also, I want to mention our Patreon page, of course, if you want to go to that. It's patreon.com/13o'clock podcast. If you would like to donate to the show and you don't want to do a monthly donation, then if you go to our blog, which is 13o'clockpodcast.wordpress.com or something like that, you'll see it. Then there's a button on there where you can do a one-time PayPal donation if you would like to do that.
Yeah, so, some people don't like Patreon.
Yeah, if some people don't like Patreon or they don't want to do a monthly rolling donation, which is totally fine. But if you still want to donate to the show, then there's a PayPal donation little link on there.
We actually got a new Patreon last I saw.
Yeah.
I guess I haven't checked in a couple of days. There may be another one on there. But boy, we could use some more patrons.
Yeah.
We don't have that many. I think we only have 8.
Something like that, yeah. Well,
They're heavy lifters, though. Some of those people are paying $20 a month.
Yeah.
We're going to hook them up. We're going to send them some cool merchandise.
Yeah, actually on the 15th, which is this Friday, hopefully, if our house is still standing,
yeah.
Then I'm going to be sending out some books and autographs and
some goodies.
Swag to our $20 and up patrons.
Yeah.
So those will be mailed out on the 15th, so keep an eye out for that. And what else? We're going to put up a new movie review. There should be a new movie review. By the time this goes up, there should be another movie review up.
Yeah.
Which will be an American Werewolf in London.
Yeah, this is a good movie.
But yeah, so that should be up by the time this show goes up, hopefully. Also, my new book, The Faceless Villain, which is a true crime compilation.
Almost finished.
Is almost finished.
Yeah.
I have like only just a tiny little bit left to do. And then I still have to do the print layout. But
if it wasn't for the storm, probably in a matter of a couple of days, you'd have it up there.
Yeah, that's why I was trying to get most of it done, like, before the storm came, and then I got other work and stuff like that. But, you know, it should be done very soon, and like I said, I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be for sale by, like, mid-October, the latest. Maybe not the audiobook, because that takes a little bit longer, but the print and the ebook should definitely be up by mid-October.
Yeah.
And maybe the audiobook by then, too.
You changed the look of the title cards of the new movie reviews. I think they look
really good. I did, yeah. Well, because you complained.
Yeah, they look. Yeah, I thought it was kind of boring looking.
With the red curtains. You know,
yeah,
like
I just thought, yeah, it was so okay. You know, we did it so quickly.
Yeah, I just kind of threw them together.
Yeah, but there's a big difference now. You look at those title cards next to other movie reviews on YouTube, and they pop. They look really good.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just used, like, cool stills from the movies and...
No, I think it'll generate
interest. And the lettering from the
posters. I think we're getting more new subscribers based on the movie reviews than we did on the 13 o'clock at minutes, which is quite disappointing because, boy, you put a lot of work into that.
Yeah, and I'm still going to do those. It's just they take a long time to do. The movie reviews are much easier.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just like a simple slideshow. And we just, I mean, we've seen most of the movies, so we just kind of shoot the shit out.
Gotta go where the market demand is. People like movie retrospectives and movie reviews.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're concentrating more on doing those. Like I said, I'm still going to do some of the 13 o'clock in minutes videos. They just take longer.
And I got some new cool Blu-rays people are going to love me. They're going to love me talking about some of these movies. Everybody knows that Flash Gordon's coming.
I got Flash Gordon.
I got that bitch on Blu-ray. All right. And when it arrives, then we're going to do a Blu-ray review eventually.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do Flash Gordon, actually, because that movie's a lot of fun.
These new Blu-rays they're so much better than the DVDs. The colors pop a lot better. There's a lot more bonus material, but, you know, in them, I like them.
Well, gosh, the John Carpenter movies that we've got, it's like, there's so much extra stuff on there that it's like
getting three movies.
Yeah. I mean, I think we didn't even get through all the extra stuff on the thing, did we?
No.
Yeah. And no, that's like hours and hours and hours.
No, you can sit there and watch The Thing and have the Crustle tell you what it was like to film. Like, you know, all the commentary.
Yeah.
I haven't got to that.
I haven't watched the commentary either. I watched some of the like special effects documentaries and stuff like that.
Blu-ray on They Live was awesome too.
Yeah, we're gonna do like They Live also because he just got that on Blu-ray too.
And saw that new Rambo movie.
Now see, we watched that last night because you bought it, right?
Yeah.
Because our friend Matt, he recommended it.
Yeah, Matt loves the Crustle. I showed him the Crustle on Escape from New York. He had never seen it. And he goes, oh, man, that's a really good... Dude, have you seen the new Rambo? And I went, no. He goes, oh, you got to see the
like,
new
when
Rambo.
Did that movie come out?
I think it was like 2011 or something.
Okay, because we were watching it last night, because I was pretty sure I'd never seen it, but when we were watching it last night, I'm like, I have seen this fucking movie.
It had over-the-top gore.
It was very gory, yeah. But that's why I remember, like, I didn't remember that I'd seen it until we started watching it, and then I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah.
I've seen this before.
Yeah.
I don't know how or under what circumstances I would have seen it, unless I saw it with you.
I liked it all right.
Yeah, it was all right.
I don't think we'll do a movie review on it. But
probably not.
I liked it all right.
Well, there wasn't much to it other than limbs flying everywhere and people getting blown up by landmines.
Yeah, I kind of respect...
and beheaded.
I kind of respect the Stallone for doing it, though, you know?
Yeah.
He directed that, and I think he wrote a lot of it.
Yeah, he co-wrote it,
It was almost kind of like an independent film.
Yeah.
I don't know if it made money, but it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's a shoot 'em up. It's a shoot 'em up.
Some of the CGI like was a little
the bomb blast.
Dodgy.
Yeah.
But, you know, other than that, it was an alright movie. I kind of enjoyed it. But like I said, I was watching and I was like, I'm sure I've seen this fucking movie before, but I don't know.
A lot of people have taken little samples of the scenes and put them in their videos. I've seen some of those people blowing up before. Okay, We got to get to LaVey.
All right. So today we are talking about Anton LaVey.
Yeah.
Kind of talking about, I don't know, we're just kind of shooting the shit about him in general.
Yeah.
He seemed like sort of a fascinating character, much like Aleister Crowley was. I think Crowley took it more seriously.
Yeah, Crowley believed in his bullshit.
I think he really did
believe. At least,
I don't think Anton LaVey did.
No, I think it was the marketing.
Yeah, I think it
was... But he was cool. He was a showman.
Yeah, I was going to say he was very P.T. Barnum type of... Yeah,
and he didn't deny that. He said that's part of Satanism.
Yeah.
He called it lesser magic, if I remember correctly. Is it lesser or greater magic? I think he called it lesser magic. It's been a long time since I've read the book. He wasn't being deceptive.
No, he did admit that he was a liar.
And yeah, and he did...
That he made a lot of things up. Exactly. And that you would never, you know...
He's a very entertaining guy.
Yeah, but like I said... Much like Crowley, there's so much legend and myth and stuff like that surrounding him. A lot of him generated by himself that, you know, in later years, like after he died, you know, people came forward and said, no, that wasn't true. Or, you know, various people that investigated him. Like probably from his early life, how he explained like getting into Satanism and stuff like that was that, oh, he left high school and went to join the circus or the carnival, and that he worked as a cage boy.
Yeah, like a lion tamer,
that type of thing.
And a organist for the, you know, the circus organ.
Yeah, he played like the organ and the calliope and stuff like that.
That's what it's called, yeah.
Okay, so he said that he got the idea, the sort of kernel of the idea of starting Satanism, so he says, because when he joined the carnival, he said, you know, I saw the same people coming out and watching all the burlesque shows and all the stuff at the carnival, and then you'd see them Sunday in the revival tent, you know, praising Jesus and all this other stuff. So he saw, like, the hypocrisy of religion, pretty much. That's what he said. And that's kind of what encouraged him to get away from religion or organized religion and start...
Yeah, he ended up making an unreligion, basically.
Yeah.
Based on philosophies that had already existed, if you ask me.
He swiped most of his ideas. Yeah, well, actually, he pretty much swiped all his ideas.
Yeah, it's like a mixture of Ayn Rand and Friedrich Nietzsche.
Well, and honestly, and I'll probably bring this up later, but a lot of the stuff that's in the Satanic Bible and stuff like that, some of it he stole word for word from a white supremacist screed from 1896 called Might is Right by Ragnar Redbeard, who they don't know who that person was. You know, it was like a pseudonym. But it was sort of this really scary, racist.
Yeah,
But the thing is, Anton LaVey, because he was Jewish... I'm guessing that when he wrote the Satanic Bible, he's like, oh, well, I like some of the ideas from Might is Right, the more libertarian type of ideas, but he didn't like all the racism and proto-fascism and stuff like that that was in there, so he got rid of all that and sort of replaced it with esotericism, like philosophical kind of stuff that he stole from, like, John Dee, like, Enochian Keys and all that kind of stuff. But like I said, some of the stuff that's in the Satanic Bible was taken word for word from Might is Right.
Well, he liked panache.
Yeah.
Might is Right probably had some pretty cool passages in it.
Yeah.
That sounded good. So
it was like some kind of Viking.
LaVey himself said that it's your right to steal things.
Yeah.
Basically. If you can steal it, or if you can flip an idea around, then you should, if you like it.
Yeah.
It's part of your abilities. So there's nothing wrong with plagiarizing and stealing.
Yeah. And he probably figured, the guy's dead. What's he going to do?
Yeah. Sure.
That was a long time ago. That's probably in the public domain then anyway. But, the thing is, LaVey, like I said, the stuff about him joining the carnival and all that kind of stuff, there's really no evidence that he had really ever joined the carnival. However, when he was a little bit older, he was an organ player and played the calliope and things like that. And, you know, he moved out to, he lived in San Francisco. He was actually born in San Francisco. And then later he went to LA and he was able to get jobs in nightclubs and stuff like that, playing the organ and whatnot. And in various burlesque houses. Now, there's also a legend, too, I think that he came up with, that he had an affair with the then unknown Marilyn Monroe when she was a burlesque dancer at the Mayan Theater. Now, this has been denied by pretty much everyone. Right. Because everyone says, for one thing, the Mayan Theater was never a burlesque theater.
Mm-hmm.
And for another thing, Marilyn Monroe had never danced there. So, you know, he probably made that up also.
Yeah, I don't think he had anything to do with Marilyn Monroe.
No, no one else thinks
it
that
was.
Either.
Yeah, it was common for him to make up stories.
Like I said, that's why it's kind of hard. And like Crowley, it's kind of hard to get to the bottom of it. Because he was really a really good self-promoter.
Yeah.
So he would just make things up. Like I said, he never denied that, really. He even said that in his biography. Like he would make up all these stories.
Sure.
He's like, yeah, I'm a liar. That's what Satan does, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's part of his magic.
Yeah, that's part of his shtick.
Well, that's what they say.
Yeah. So then he claims, after that whole thing happened, then he claims that he went back to San Francisco. And then he says that he worked, I think he worked as like a crime photographer for the San Francisco Police Department.
I think that did happen.
He might have in some capacity. He also said he worked as a psychic investigator, which I think was kind of, all right, I can buy that.
I don't know who paid him.
Right. He might have been like a freelance psychic investigator. He said that the San Francisco Police Department referred him some cases like psychics. Now, some police departments do use psychics. I don't think they like that to be publicized necessarily.
I guarantee you
it's possible. But
yeah, I guarantee you there wasn't much to that.
No, I don't think so. Like I said, some of it might be true, but he probably like exaggerated a lot. Kind of during this time when he was into all this, you know, psychic investigation and occult interest and stuff like that, he kind of made friends with like a lot of horror sci-fi type of writers, like a lot of writers that worked for Weird Tales magazine and stuff like that, like Clark Ashton Smith and people of that nature. So he kind of got into those sort of circles.
Yeah.
You know, he got married. He eventually ended up marrying once or twice, but he had like a bunch of different girlfriends. He had some kids, and Xena is probably the most famous one because she was on that Geraldo show.
Yeah, good looking woman.
I think we talked about her a little bit on that show back in episode 2 when we did Satanic Panic. And even though she was kind of into the church for a long time, it was like a representative of it. After he died, she kind of renounced him and went an opposite way. There were allegations after he died that he had been abusive, and I don't know if toward her or toward her mother or whatever, because he was never married to her mother, although they were together for 25 years.
Anton was a good showman, but basically what he was is he was a scenester. A lot of the stuff, a lot of the stuff that he did, you could really only get away with it if you were in the right social scenes, right social circles.
Yeah, I think it definitely helped that he was kind of in with all these other sort of psychic investigators, these sort of, you know, sci-fi writers. And he kind of, because he played organ in LA nightclubs and stuff like that, I guess he kind of got in with a little bit of the Hollywood scene and stuff too. And, you know, he started having parties and like more and more famous people would come.
Yeah, I think there was a claim that he knew Manson.
Charles Manson.
Yeah, yeah. It's my understanding that he may have known Charles Manson too, or at least met him.
Yeah, I'm not sure, and I might get a little bit more into that later, but I'm not sure if he knew Charles Manson, but it's pretty much for sure that he knew Susan Atkins.
Okay.
Yeah, so I might talk about that a little bit later, but
did you know that the Beach Boys knew Charles Manson?
Yeah, everybody knows that.
And one dude said, man, he was pretty good, he could play.
Yeah. Didn't they, well, I thought they bought some of his songs, didn't they?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like,
don't
quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure I heard that.
Yeah, I don't remember.
That they bought some of his songs, like, before he went all serial killery.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And actually
he wasn't really a serial killer though.
Well, he was like the mastermind, cult leader that made people be serial killers. Yeah, it's funny because the association between Satanism and Anton LaVey and Charles Manson was one of the things that kind of made a lot of people run away from the church, you know what I mean, after 1969.
Started to fall apart. It was a fad, you know, for a while.
It definitely was. I definitely think, you know, in the mid-60s, you know, and I think we talked about this too on the Satanic Panic show, that people were becoming disillusioned with traditional religions and stuff like that. So we're, you know, all the hippies and stuff, they were looking for other stuff, new age type religion. And so it seems like Anton LaVey came along at just the right time.
It's the right place, the right time, the right character and personality. And, you know, I mean, shit. Some of these Hollywood people would go to his house and go to parties with him would become Satanists. Sammy Davis Jr.
He was in it for a while, yeah.
Yeah, if you watch the Cannonball Run, he's dressed as a priest and he's wearing the little satanic church fucking head of Baphomet.
Does he have the one red fingernail, the pinky fingernail? I'd have to see that. I saw that movie a million times when I was growing up, but I haven't seen it since then. But that was kind of one of their little things where they would paint their pinky fingernail red. And apparently he did that. So yeah, he was in there for a while too. Now, the Church of Satan was founded, of course, or so he says, on June 6th, 1966. Which in, you know, Rosemary's Baby was when it was conceived.
He called it the Year One.
Year One, yes. Yeah. Anna Satanis or whatever it was. Like I said, ever the showman, ever the P.T. Barnum kind of thing. And he also said that our little kitten keeps running in and out of the room. That's why you keep hearing the door creak.
She can actually open the door.
Yeah, she figured out how to open the door. And she keeps coming in and be like, what are you guys doing in here?
There we go.
Okay, yeah. That door doesn't really close all the way. But she keeps pushing the door.
I gotta fix it.
Yeah, you should. But yeah, so he claims that June 6, 1966, he proclaimed it year one. He's like, I'm going to shave my head and I'm going to start a satanic cult. Now, later on, his wife or girlfriend at the time said, well, he actually shaved his head because I dared him to. Or looks, he lost a bet or something.
It
like
looks
that.
Really cool. It looks just like Max von Sydow from Ming the Merciless.
And he actually has been compared to looking like Ming the Merciless.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, there were actually like a lot of, because it wasn't... you know, it was kind of a hip thing to be in the Church of Satan.
Yeah.
Because the Church of Satan, they weren't really religious. I mean, even from their founding, I don't think they were meant to be. They didn't really believe in the devil. They didn't believe in demons. They didn't believe in any supernatural entities.
No.
It was kind of more about just being a hedonistic, individualistic thing that had some kind of... ritual on top of it, just as kind of a fun, indulgent.
Yeah, I'd almost describe it as like a more stylish version of atheism.
Yeah, and it actually is an atheistic,
right?
As it still is now, yeah. And so are the offshoot groups.
Yeah, they just use the devil and the idea of the devil and Satan to troll Christians and like squares.
Yeah,
that'd be weird.
Just because they know that people are afraid of that type of thing and stuff like that, but. It's actually kind of funny to me because I had never heard any of Anton LaVey's. Like, he made a couple albums and stuff like that because, you know, he played the organ in Calliope. And this is an interesting fact, too. Anton LaVey, as much as he is kind of name-checked by a lot of, you know, death metal bands, he hated that kind of music.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Hated that kind of music. He liked old stuff. He liked really old, like, you know, he was an old organ player. Okay. But he liked stuff from the 30s and stuff like that from when he was growing up. Yeah, he couldn't stand any of that heavy metal or any of that stuff. And it just, or I don't even think he liked rock music particularly.
Marilyn Manson went to go meet up with him.
Yeah, that's true. I think I have a picture of that.
Manson said the house was pretty shabby at the time and that he was just like a regular old guy. And
yeah.
I bet you Anton didn't even know who Marilyn Manson was.
He probably didn't.
Yeah.
It seemed like most of the music that he liked was old stuff. Right. He really didn't like any heavy metal or anything like that. Yeah, so like I said, when he formed the Church of Satan, I think some of the hippies of kind of a darker predilection were kind of like, oh, that's kind of a cool idea. Yeah. But I had never heard any of Anton LaVey's albums because he made a couple. Mm. And so when I was researching the show, I said, well, I want like a little music snippet from something that he wrote or anything. I don't think he sang, but because most of it was instrumental or there was a woman singing on it. It's funny to me because it's very, I think I said to you yesterday, I said, it's very Count Chocula. Which I'm not sure if that was like scary or like freaked out the squares at the time. But like now it's, in fact, the song that I have that I'm going to put at the end, actually, it reminded me of that 45 Graves song, the one about the vampire. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, I don't remember it either.
But yeah, I'll find it later.
I don't remember the name of it.
But yeah, it kind of reminds me of that. Like, it's very cartoony, like a Disney Halloween kind of special sort of music. But so, not particularly frightening, I don't think. But apparently, a lot of people were freaked out by it. But, you know, not so much in the 60s. Like I said, they kind of... you know, he got a lot of Hollywood people to come to his parties and shit like that. Now, he had a house called the Black House.
Yeah.
And he had all of these big parties there and he would have rituals there. You know, probably one of the reasons that his parties were so famous was because he would have these kind of black mass ceremonies with naked ladies and they would be acting as the altar and he would have dancers and stuff like that.
Yeah, some were filmed. You can show some of them.
Yeah, there's pictures of them all over the place.
They're definitely putting on a show.
And
back in the day, it would have tripped you out, but you look at it today, it's
it was
very
theatricality,
tame.
Very Alice Cooper type, which Alice Cooper type of thing, like he would do a little bit later. Like I said, which I've never understood why people found that sort of thing frightening or anything like that. But what do I know? Yeah. But interestingly, at one of his parties, and actually it might have been more than one, but in about 1967, he was having like a party that he was just calling the Witches' Sabbath or whatever. And he was like looking around for women to dance naked at it, or dance topless rather. And one of these women was Susan Atkins. Mm-hmm. Now this was 2 years before the Manson murders.
Okay.
And she was apparently a pretty normal chick. Now, she wrote a book later, which I didn't know, because she found Jesus, of course.
Right.
And so she kind of wrote a book about, oh, you know, I was a devil worshiper and now I found the light and blah, blah, blah. Evidently, from what I can read. Yeah, I'm not going to read it. Jeez.
Yeah.
But in that book, She says that over the course of, like, the rehearsals for this party, you know, she was practicing her dancing and all this other stuff. She says that her boyfriend at the time, you know, said, well, I could see you changing, like, that whole time that you were, like, so she was, like, being taken over by the dark side. I don't know if she was trying to, like, allay some responsibility for her later actions by saying Anton LaVey put a curse on me or some shit like that. I don't know if that's what she was saying. But she was saying that that's kind of... that was the start of her downfall that led with her murdering several people.
Yeah, it wasn't that, though.
No, of course not. Like I said, that was just her kind of saying, oh, the devil made me do it, just in a more roundabout way. But I'll tell you what, okay, so we're at the halfway point right now, so we are going to take a break right now, and then when we come back, we will talk some more about Anton LaVey.
There are terrors, real and imaginary, and I write about them all. Paranormal nonfiction, horror fiction, the Rochdale Poltergeist, the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist, the Associated Hopeful Monsters, Red Menace, the Five Poisons, Bellwether. Go to www.jennyashford.com or search Amazon for the Jenny Ashford author page.
Hey, 13 O'Clock fans. Love the show but don't have an hour to spare? Check out our new list channel, 13 O'Clock in Minutes. All the fun, creepy topics of the main podcast, but in easy-to-swallow, bite-sized pieces. Links in the description. More videos to come soon.
The Unseen Hand, a new exploration of poltergeist phenomena by Jenny Ashford. Author of The Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, and The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Unseen Hand is a comprehensive collection of over 100 reported poltergeist cases from the first century to the present day. All the best-known cases are presented, from the Bell Witch to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, from Rosenheim to Tina Resch, from Enfield to The Entity. A large selection of fascinating and lesser-known accounts from all over the world are also included, and all contain testimony from the most eerie and extraordinary events. The Unseen Hand is the ultimate compendium for readers interested in poltergeist disturbances throughout history and the theories behind what causes them. On sale now from Amazon in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. Go to Unseen Hand Book on Facebook and visit www.jennyashford.com for more information.
Okay, so we're back talking about Anton LaVey. Now, really, the Church of Satan, it's kind of, you know, faddishness or popularity or something like that, really didn't last much beyond 1969. It still exists today, obviously. After Anton LaVey's death, it was taken over by Peter H. Gilmore, who still runs it now.
Yeah, and I recommend that guy. He does really good podcast. Peter H. Gilmore.
Yeah.
He's funny.
Yeah, so he's the high priest.
He's smart, too, yeah.
But at the time, probably the best known, other than, you know, the writers that were in the group and Sammy Davis Jr. and stuff like that, I think his best known association, Hollywood-wise, was with Jane Mansfield. Now, Jane Mansfield, probably best known, I don't know if younger listeners know who she is, even think she does, very popular 50s blonde bombshell type of, she posed for Playboy, that's kind of how she got famous. She was in a couple movies, including probably her most famous one is The Girl Can't Help It, which actually we just watched a review of last night. She was kind of a Marilyn Monroe type, but much more, you know, voluptuous, like much, like big, huge tits and stuff like that. You know, Jane Mansfield. She was kind of a flash in the pan, I guess. She was really only famous for a few years. I think she got famous in the late 50s, and then by the time early 1960s.
Howard Hughes liked her.
Yeah, I mean, she seemed like a cool chick.
That was one of his
I've seen a couple of other movies that she was in, and she seems like a cutie pie. You know, by the time the early 60s rolled around, she was kind of, her fame was kind of on the wane.
Yeah.
And apparently, I don't know if she got associated with the Church of Satan as a sort of gimmick or because she thought it would make her seem edgier. She wanted to do something kind of controversial, rather. But by all accounts, she and Anton LaVey were actually really good friends.
Okay.
She spent a lot of time at his house. He would come to her house, which was called the Pink Palace. And had a heart-shaped pool. She had a little chihuahua, the whole deal. She was very, you know what I mean? She was kind of one of those type of girls. But apparently she was much smarter than she seemed. She would just kind of play dumb because she thought that's what people wanted. So her and Anton LaVey were pretty good friends. Now, apparently her boyfriend at the time, she was married 3 times. She didn't have a real super happy life. But her boyfriend at the time of her association with Anton LaVey, was evidently super jealous. He didn't really, and he thought the whole Anton LaVey Satanism thing was stupid.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they would come over to Anton LaVey's house, he would, like, laugh at all the stuff and, like, look at this stupid bullshit, blah, blah, blah. You know, and he would, like, you know, do that kind of crap. Now, the legend goes that Anton LaVey put a curse on this person. I can't remember what his name is. Ross something, I want to say. I had it here, but I don't know. Right. So he supposedly put a curse on him. That's what the legend goes. Now, a little while later, obviously, if you know anything about Jane Mansfield, him and her and one other guy that were in this car, it was a car accident, and the three adults were killed.
Right.
Her children were also in the car, but they all survived. I think the perception is that Jane Mansfield was decapitated.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the case. Okay. It was actually just her wig that all kind right. of came off and went into the windshield, or was kind of stuck in the windshield. So she was not decapitated. But there was, like, a lot of rumor around that time that Anton LaVey's curse had killed her as well.
Right.
Like, because it was trying to get him.
Right. She was friendly fire.
Friendly fire in the satanic curse. That's terrible.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, I don't know if that's true. That's kind of the only thing. There's kind of different cases about it, because there's some where he said that the guy, like, lit a candle, like, in his house.
Yeah.
And Anton LaVey was like, don't light that. That's my cursing candle. Like, right. I hope I put it out in time or something like that. But then I don't know if the story changed, or if just later he got pissed at him and was like, all right, fuck you, I'm cursing you for real.
Right.
But apparently, so the guy did get killed, like, not too long after that. Okay, so, like I said, kind of a hip thing for a few years, mid to late 60s. Then the whole Charles Manson thing happened. And it seems to me, like, the Manson murders were kind of like the abrupt end of the hippie era. Or, you know, that was... Or it seems like
gone too far.
Yeah, pretty much. And because Susan Atkins was one of the killers, and she had also been associated with Anton LaVey, and Charles Manson also had some kind of similar ideas, or, you know, similar kind of, I'm God and the devil, I'm this and that and the other thing. Right. Charles Manson was also kind of interested in Scientology too, wasn't he? Briefly.
Yeah, briefly.
So he liked all the bullshit belief systems, I guess. But
that
yeah.
That was, you know, the L.A. scene back in those days. And
like
all,
I said, it does seem like a lot of people.
Yeah, all the notable people all hung out pretty much in the same scene. So,
and I would hate to cast aspersions, because I don't want to be one of those people like the people in the 80s during the Satanic Panic, like, everybody that plays Dungeons and Dragons is a Satanist, blah, blah, blah. Right. Because there was so much of that shit going, everybody was getting into crazy New Age beliefs and cults and stuff like that. And 99.99% of those people didn't kill anybody or didn't hurt anybody. They just,
most of them weren't even serious.
No, they just did it for a few years for fun, and they were like, okay, well, that was my wayward youth.
Right.
Kind of thing. And I think a lot of people that got involved in Satanism, same kind of thing.
Well, the nightclubs weren't as good back then, so you had to do something.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Nightclubs didn't really become good until the disco era.
I think that's actually probably a more controversial statement than Satanism.
Well, that was the beginning
disco.
That was the beginning of the modern.
Well, it was nightclub. It was the beginning of the era where the nightclub was like
the center of a social
an
scene.
End all be all. Yeah. So, you know, like I said, I would probably say disco probably started that off.
Yeah.
As much as and
then
I,
it broke
like
into
it.
And then everybody got their own version of that. Yeah. You had metalheads and punk rockers.
And then in the early 80s, you had your
prog
new romantics
rock and
type of stuff.
New romantic and everything.
All with all the stuff in England about the song.
But I think it was kind of like disco that brought that to the mainstream.
Yeah, you're probably right about that.
To the mainstream. You know,
yeah.
There you know, New York had a punk underground scene before that. Getting off topic, but
yeah.
But really disco brought the idea of the nightclub, I think. As a center of a social scene to the mainstream.
Yeah.
But how long are you going to run disco for? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You need lots of cocaine to run disco.
And by the 80s, they had all run out.
Yeah, they had run out.
They had done all of the cocaine. But like you said, in the 60s, I guess there, you know, people would have house parties, or they would have stuff like that. And so you had to do something different, I suppose.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like, oh, let's do Satanism. Let's have people dress in witch capes and, you know, with their boobies hanging out and like touch each other with swords and have all kind of like H.P. Lovecraft necromancy
shit
going on.
It was a California thing too.
I guess so, yeah. California. There's a Sally.
Well, I was born, yeah, I was born there, so I, you know.
Yeah.
I left in 81, and I know what California was back in those days. I remember it in the 70s.
Yeah.
And most of those people are gone now.
Yeah.
They moved to other parts of the United States, but long story.
Well, the thing too, like, before we go on to something else, was that Jane Mansfield, you know, despite being hanging out with Anton LaVey, and she would, like, go out to dinner with him and stuff, there were rumors that they, you know, had an affair.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not substantiated. She proclaimed all throughout her life that she was a Catholic and she didn't believe in Satanism and all that kind of stuff. But like I said,
Satanists didn't believe in Satanism either.
Yeah, it was just kind of all a show. I think it still is.
Well, we can talk about what its tenets are. We have
that. Yeah. So what, you know, what's the thing about the Church of Satan? Now, like I said, he stole a great deal of ideas from
philosophies,
yeah. You know, like you said, Nietzsche, Soul Survivor, from Ayn Rand, and, you know, that type of social Darwinism type ideas and that kind of thing that were going on back then. And then he kind of added a layer of esotericism and philosophy on top of it. But at its core, it's pretty much, it's an individualist, it's a little nihilistic too, I would think, but it's more of just like an individualistic philosophy that basically just says
that it describes man as man is, or how they believe man is.
Yeah.
And I agree with most of it, what they're saying, actually.
Okay, so the Church of Satan officially has 9 satanic statements.
Yeah, they're not commandments.
Not commandments. These are just statements
of truth.
And they also have 9 satanic sins, which we will get to in a minute.
Yeah.
But the 9 satanic statements, famously, are
1. Satan represents indulgence instead of abstinence. And what they're talking about is, you know, most of your religions, they're saying, they're asking you to abstain from pleasure.
Yeah.
Well, in this system, they're saying that's kind of dumb. Abstain, why? They're saying there's no afterlife, so there's no reason.
Yeah, like I said, it's an atheistic philosophy. Right. So, you know, it's not kind of a course of, you know. And the next one, which is 2, Satan represents vital existence instead of spiritual pipe dreams.
Yeah, they're talking about, you know, living in the here and now instead of some, you know, fantasy future.
Yeah,
in the
thinking
afterlife.
That something's going to happen after you die, that you'll go to heaven or wherever. 3, Satan represents undefiled wisdom instead of hypocritical self-deceit.
Yeah, they're saying that, you know, it's better to know the truth instead of buying into this bullshit that you'd read in religions.
Right. 4, Satan represents kindness to those who deserve it instead of love wasted on ingrates.
What they're saying there is basically, you know, only worry about people who are good people. Don't worry about bad people or people that, you know, aren't worth anything to you, you know, because they're dumb or just bad. You know.
5, Satan represents vengeance instead of turning the other cheek.
Basically what they're saying is that sometimes you gotta slap a hoe. That's what they're talking about. You know what I mean? In today's terms, that'd be, you know, you better handle your business. Somebody does you wrong, you're gonna have to pay him back.
6, Satan represents responsibility to the responsible instead of concern for psychic vampires.
Yeah, that kind of goes back.
We know one of those.
Yeah. That kind of goes back to just worry about the good people.
So a lot of these are kind of samey.
Yeah, they're kind of samey.
7, Satan represents man as just another animal, sometimes better, more often worse than those who walk on all fours, who because of his divine spiritual and intellectual development, that part is in quotes, has become the most vicious animal of all.
Yeah, they're just saying, you know, we're animals like the rest of the animals, and because we're smart, we can really put a hurting on things.
We can really think of some fucked up shit that perhaps a honey badger would not.
Right, yeah.
8, Satan represents all of the so-called sins as they all lead to physical, mental, or emotional gratification.
There was actually certain schools of Christian thought that thought that you, in order to reach salvation, you had to commit sins.
Yeah.
You had to commit sins and know what sins are, and then you had to be absolved of those sins so you could
transcend
them. That's
Which is actually a pretty good way. I mean, that if there was only a choice of 2 Christian cults where one said you can't have pie, and the other one said you can have pie if you ask for forgiveness after you eat the pie, then I know which one I'm going to do.
and do you know who was big into that? Rasputin.
Yeah, that figures.
That was Rasputin's version of Christianity. That's how he got in girls' pants.
Yeah. I can do whatever I want.
Let's
as long
do some
as I...
sin, and then I'll absolve you of the sin, so you know what absolution is like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds legit.
That way you can you can choose good. You have to know evil in order to
see. Now that makes more sense to me than listening to some crap from somebody that's never done anything.
Yeah.
And has never gone through any shit or anything right. like that. Like, how the fuck would they know anything?
Right.
It's just kind of like, you know what I mean? It's kind of like in the old days when couples would get marriage advice yeah. from some crusty old dude who was yeah. a virgin.
Yeah, an old priest that never been married. Yeah,
yeah, like, what the fuck would he know?
Yeah. Okay, what was number
nine? All right, number nine. Satan has been the best friend the church has ever had as he has kept it in business all these years.
Yeah, trolling.
Which they still do nowadays.
Yeah. So now, really, if you look at those nine statements, there's not a whole lot to them that can be construed as unusual.
Yeah. Most of them aren't even really all that controversial.
No, not anymore.
They're not satanic by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
I think that sometimes, because I don't know, like, I feel like a lot of, edgy teenagers were into this back in the day, because I think they thought it sounded like, more edgy than it was.
Well, I think in the days that was, outside the window of what was accepted.
True. It was probably outside the window. It was outside the window of acceptability. Sure.
Right. But nowadays that's just kind of how things are.
Yeah. I don't think anyone is
for most people
offended by that anymore, unless they're like super fundamentalist or something like that. Now there are also nine satanic sins.
Yeah. The sins are funny. Yes.
Now the sins of Satanism. Number one is stupidity.
Yeah, that's a sin.
Which I'd agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with some of this stuff, yeah. They're basically saying, Satanists should see through people trying to deceive them and see through bullshit, on the whole. Number two is pretentiousness.
Yeah, don't be stuck up.
Which is kind of funny because, I don't know if I'd call Anton LaVey pretentious, but I think Crowley was more pretentious. At least Anton LaVey was like, yeah, it's all bullshit.
Well, Anton liked people that had, pride in the things that they do. You had to back it up. You know, a person who is pretentious, has all this pride and it's unfounded. That's the way he saw it.
The number three satanic sin is solipsism.
Yeah.
Meaning projecting your own beliefs or responses onto other people, assuming that other people are the same as you.
Another way of looking at it is just seeing yourself as the center of the universe as another interpretation of that.
Yeah, same type of thing. Number four is self-deceit, which is also in the satanic statements, but they thought it was important enough to double up on it. Number five, herd conformity. That's pretty self-explanatory.
Being individual.
Yeah. Number six, lack of perspective. They say you must never lose sight of who and what you are and what a threat you can be by your very existence.
Yeah.
Number seven, forgetfulness of past orthodoxies. They're basically saying, don't forget all the bullshit that happened back then. It's like, don't fall for the same bullshit again.
Right, yeah.
Like, if it's all, so be aware of things that have gone on before and don't fall for the same stuff again. Number eight, counterproductive pride.
Yeah.
He didn't have anything against pride per se, as you said,
right,
but you had to have something to be proud of. He didn't people who were cocky. Or like overconfident when they didn't have anything to back it up.
Yeah, if you had inferior skills, but then you're walking around like you're proud as hell, then you don't have the right to the pride.
And number nine, lack of aesthetics.
Yeah, bad taste and shit.
Or being a slob.
Yeah.
I mean, you had to kind of go out looking your best and stuff like that, which, we're in the goth subculture, so we're well aware.
Actually, if you were to look at Anton and the Church of Satan and everything, in a way, they were goths. They were prototype goths.
Yeah, it's the same type of thing.
Visually, they were goths.
Yeah.
Actually, some of the attitudes were. There were times there where some of the early goth scene, like especially the post-industrial goth, they were also Satanists, like Guys from Death in June.
Yeah.
Current 93. They had elements of Satanism.
Now, throughout the 60s and 70s, Anton LaVey, he claimed that he was he was a consultant for Rosemary's Baby. He also said that he played Satan during the rape scene.
Yeah, which I really doubt.
Everyone on the crew of Rosemary's Baby was like, no.
No, it didn't happen.
But however, one movie he was involved with was The Devil's Reign, starring John Travolta and The Chat.
Really? The Chat? We gotta see that one. LaVey was in that?
Yeah. Okay. Briefly. He had and he actually was in that because I saw him.
Okay.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time, but I've seen
We're gonna review that one.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to do The Devil's Reign. It's, I think Ernest Borgnine was in it too. Awesome. as a cult leader.
The Borg. I'm gonna put the Borg on it.
The Borg. Yeah, we were just talking about him on our Escape from New York review because he played Cappy. But yeah, I'm pretty sure if I remember correctly, he was in The Devil's Reign. But yeah, so Anton LaVey actually was in that. I think he's in like one scene for like 2 seconds or something like that. You kind of see him in the background. But, you know, as the 70s went on, you know, the church started to fall apart. After 1969, a lot of people
It didn't make money.
Left. Yeah, and it didn't make money. And he started trying to make money off of it by saying, by doing a Scientology type of thing and saying, oh, well, you can attain the higher levels if you give me X amount of dollars.
Right, yeah.
And I think a lot of people got pissed off at that. We're like, fuck you, man.
They saw through that.
Yeah. And that, well, see, that's why the whole religion of Satan, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot by telling everybody, hey, think for yourself and be individual and see through bullshit.
Give us some money.
Because then if you say, give us some money, everybody's like, man,
get out of here.
What did you teach me?
Well, the house started to fall apart.
Yeah.
The black house. You see photographs of it. It's, the house is not very special looking. It's just normal San
Francisco. It's weird because almost every single thing I've read about Anton LaVey, the person that wrote the article felt the need to call the house ugly.
It kind of was.
Adjective that they all used. Yeah. I don't know if it was because, but they were all written at different times, but they all called it ugly.
And it was not a real expensive house. I mean, you know, don't expect to see some kind of a black mansion somewhere in the middle of a manor.
Which would have been rad.
That'd have been really cool. No, this is just like a little townhouse.
Well, it's not, he wasn't like a zillionaire.
No,
like,
he couldn't afford.
Yeah, he didn't have any money. It's like he had a lot more notoriety than money.
Think shag carpeting.
Yeah.
70s shag carpeting.
It's like he read a bunch of books and had some albums and stuff, but it's like even at its height, I don't know how many copies that book sold or how many copies those albums sold. I mean, that's a very niche market.
Yeah.
Satanism. But, you know, by the time the 80s came around and, you know, there was the whole satanic panic thing and stuff. So I feel like he maybe had a little bit of a revival then, but you know, at that point, he was just kind of like a boogeyman for the fundamentalist right, really.
It was my understanding that, you know, like this heavy metal guys and, you know, of course, Marilyn Manson, some of those guys would go meet Anton LaVey.
Yeah.
And they would get like the official blessing.
Even though, like I said, he
didn't give Anton any money either.
No. And like I said, Anton LaVey might not have even known who they were. Yeah. Just like, hey, these long-haired Satan guys want to come see you.
There's this guy picture taking. There's this guy out here named Vince Neil.
Put some black candles and shit in the background. It'll be really
Vince
awesome.
Neil, the other one's name is Tommy Lee. You know these guys? No, I don't know.
Who the hell is that? Yeah, give them some street cred. But, you know, and then later on, I think some shit came out about Anton LaVey. Like some of his wives, girlfriends had like restraining orders against him and things of that nature. So he might not have been as nice a dude as...
Well, he never claimed to be a nice dude.
Yeah, but true. He never did claim to be a nice dude. So, yeah, that's fair enough. But like I said, he had a bunch of kids. What? Three kids, I think. Xena is probably the most famous, like I said. And he also has a son named Satan, of course. Satan, Xerxes, Karnacki, LaVey.
That's all
right. I wish my name was Satan. That's pretty rad.
Let's talk about Michael Aquino.
Yeah, okay, so, like I said, if you saw our Satanic Panic show, I think we talked a little bit about him because he was on the same Geraldo show that Xena LaVey was on.
Actually, I changed my mind. We ought to talk about him last. What we should do is talk about Gilmore and what happened to the Church of Satan, and then we can talk about...
Okay. Yeah, because after Anton LaVey died, the church was taken over by Peter H. Gilmore.
Yeah.
And they're still around now. And they still... You don't really see as much because I think people confuse them with the Satanic Temple, which are the ones that put those Baphomet statues like in protest, like the troll, you know, Christians that want to put big ten commandments. That's not them. That's a different group.
There's a bunch of little unrelated factions. Anyone can claim to be some kind of satanic church. There's no... You know,
pretty much.
You know, there's no copyright for it or anything like that.
And honestly, I think a lot of these satanic churches, like I said, are basically just... trolling organizations or people just want to have people to hang out with and talk about philosophy and shit like that. I've seen it compared to like the Church of the Subgenius, where it's like not really a church in the sense that we come and worship like supernatural beings or anything like that. We just kind of, you know, hang out with other like-minded people.
The best one going right now would be Gilmore, and he was the successor of Anton LaVey.
He seems to take it more seriously than LaVey ever did.
And he's a better guest on a podcast.
Yeah.
And he'd probably be a really cool guest. He's funny. You can see him. You can see him on YouTube.
Yeah. I mean, I always felt like Anton LaVey, like I said, I feel like he was doing it for publicity. Like he was very aware of his own legend and his myth and things like that. And I don't know if he took it seriously as a vehicle. I don't even think he philosophically took it seriously. Maybe. No. I don't really get that.
No, but Gilmore's a little more serious. He sees it as a system.
Yeah, he seems a little more scholarly about it.
Yeah, a system and a system that you could use to troll people.
Yeah.
And to be an individual.
Yeah.
And most of it has to do with looks, too. It gives you the ability to have a certain aesthetic.
Which I can just do that.
It's religion
being...
for atheists.
Yeah.
That's what he is.
Yeah, like I said, if you're an atheist, but you still want to kind of have the experience of like putting on some robes and going and hanging out with people and hanging out with naked ladies and stuff, then yeah, you can do that. If you're going to have a religion, that's really the best one to have. Because you're not like telling other people what to do.
It's a troll religion. It's similar to with the Church of the Spaghetti Monster.
Yeah, it's pretty much like that. Yeah.
But with a harder edge.
But yeah, so there's also, and like I said, so Satanic Temple, that's a different thing. But then there's also the Temple of Set.
Yeah, Aquino.
And that was started by Michael Aquino, who was in the Church of Satan for a long time.
Yeah, he was a military officer, too.
He was, yeah. And he was on that Geraldo show in the 80s that we talked about today.
He almost kind of looks like that the kid from Children of the Corn.
Isaac.
Yeah, looks like Isaac.
Isaac and Spock.
Yeah, and Spock combined. He always had a cool aesthetic.
Yeah, he's a weird-looking dude, but he was like a cool-looking dude.
And he was another one of the very serious ones.
Yeah, and the Temple of Set is still going, even though they probably only have maximum 500 members.
Yeah. What was great about that is during the Satanic Panic, they'd have him on Geraldo, and people would say these ridiculous things, and he'd just be sitting there, you know, what are you guys talking about? you know.
Well, I think that he actually... I'm not going to say he was responsible for like ending the Satanic or anything like that, but he was one of the factors because he would go on all these shows and he didn't get upset. He just stayed very calm. He stayed very rational and he just, you know, calmly explained why all these things that they were accusing people of.
They're unfounded because there was no evidence.
Yeah. Which is true. There wasn't.
Yeah. And he kind of took the wind out of the sails.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of the talk shows in the 80s and stuff like that, I mean, they're just spectacle, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, bread and circuses. So,
right, basically.
I think that the people that were audiences on that, particularly a show about Satanic Panic, I think they were kind of expecting the panelists to be these kind of like wild-eyed, like Charles Manson type of people where they're just like, we're crazy and we're going to kill people for the devil and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, Keanu would show up and he's basically Spock.
Yeah.
And they're like,
he was a veteran. He was, you know, and he was a very educated.
Yeah, I think he was a major. I think.
He might have been.
He's either a major or a lieutenant colonel.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, he was a high-ranking military officer. But yeah, so Anton LaVey, he died in 1997.
Yeah.
There was actually Blanche Barton, who was his girlfriend or wife when he died. She wrote a book about him like a biography of him in 1990 called The Secret Life of a Satanist.
Yeah.
I'd be kind of curious to... Now, she's still in the Church of Satan. She's the High Priestess, I believe.
Yeah.
So she's still sympathetic about him. But, you know, later on, I think most of the stuff that came out about him later on was mostly just that he had made a bunch of stuff up, which he never denied, like I said.
Right.
I don't know. What are your feelings overall about Anton LaVey before we wrap everything up?
I think he was an amusing guy.
Yeah.
More than anything, just... Well, I think he was the right guy at the right time to do what he did.
Yeah.
He was trying to monopolize on... certain forces that were happening in society.
Do you think he was kind of responsible for the mainstreaming of the occult that sort of came out later in the culture? Like, look at all the satanic movies that came out in the 70s and stuff like that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was occult stuff going on anyway.
True.
Most of the occult stuff that was going on, though, was kind of what you'd call, you know, like those little self-help groups. And how to get in touch with your inner spirits, you know.
Your inner child.
Kind of like, remember that show that we saw about the cult, the fake guy who was having sex with all the men?
Oh, yeah.
What was the name of that?
I don't even remember, yeah.
Most of them were like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we could look that up. The audience has no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah, we saw this documentary about it. No, I can't remember his name. I didn't know you were going to bring it up.
That's a good example of what was common in those
days. It wasn't Children of God. That was somebody else. That was that was the flirty fishing and all that kind of stuff. Because we did a show about that. All right. So we're getting to the end of the show. So we better wrap it up before we talk about this all day.
Yeah.
And we have some more hurricane prep to do. Plus another movie review that we got to record.
Yeah.
So remember, if you like the show, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, subscribe to 13 O'Clock in Minutes, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter.
Yeah, and you guys got to excuse us for this show. It's very disjointed because we have the largest hurricane in history bearing down on us.
You guys should be glad we're even doing this.
Yeah, and I'm stressed out over fixing that damn generator because I don't want to be without a problem.
It'll be all right.
Okay. I don't want the house to blow down. 200-mile-an-hour winds. Woo!
We'll be okay.
Better hope.
And well, if we're not okay, then we're not okay. We'll just figure.
I'm gonna use black magic to keep the house together.
That's what I mean. This is why we're good. It's good that we're doing a show on Anton LaVey. We're invoking satanic powers.
Asking me what I feel about Anton LaVey just out of the corner. I says, man, Anton was cool. What am I gonna say about it?
Yeah. We're invoking Anton LaVey to help save us from the hurricane.
I mean, we meet people like that all the time at the club.
We do, yeah. Like I said, I guess in the 60s, that was like kind of a big thing.
That's a big deal, but today...
But now we know at least a dozen people.
Yeah,
that
would just be... You meet a guy like that today, you're just like, oh, yeah, hey, how you doing, man? You know, you meet him all the time.
What's up, Satan?
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, so, and don't forget to check out our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/13oclockpodcast. And also, if you don't want to do a monthly donation, then like I said, on our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com, there is a link just right on the little side thing there that says PayPal, and you can make a one-time donation to PayPal if you would like to do that. That would be really cool. And that'll do it for episode 56 about Anton LaVey.
Yeah, buy some shirts too.
Buy some shirts? Yeah. Sure, yeah. I put new ones up. I put a Countess Bathory up.
I'm wearing one right now.
You are, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I had to update a bunch of our old designs because they had the Project Entertainment
Network. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Because they had Project Entertainment. So, but all the shirts have been updated and there are a couple new ones up. So go check them out because they're pretty cool. And that'll do it for episode 56. I think I already said that.
Yeah.
But whatever. And hopefully we don't get blown away.
Yeah, I'm looking outside.
But
looking outside the window.
Signing off, maybe for the last time.
be like Wizard of Oz when the house blows away.
Don't even say that. Don't even say that. All right. So we'll see you guys next Tuesday, I hope. Bye. He's really rather goofy trying.